Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian!
Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome. Happy Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian on this fine afternoon. And as Brian and I caught up yesterday on the airwaves, we neglected to mention the absence of our standard producer for the 2 o'clock hour, Evan. Evan is out with a little bit of an illness, so we're wishing Evan the best. But in Brian and Evan's absence, we've got the morning producer here in the Civic Media headquarters in Madison, the Devil Radio Studios. Aaron Zommer's joining me here on the airwaves to keep me company this afternoon. How you doing, Aaron?
Doing pretty well. It's different being here later than 5 in the morning. Well, 5:45, but still.
Right. It's a little bit of the late shift that you're pulling. I appreciate you sticking around this afternoon to help me here on the airwaves. And a little bit later this show, we're going to be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, sharing his takeaways for what's going on here in Wisconsin 4 weeks out from Election Day. That's right, folks. 28 days from now are the November midterm elections. They are coming up fast, so you want to be ready for those. Dan's going to join us every Tuesday between now and Election Day, so we got a couple more Tuesday visits that we can anticipate from Dan here on these airwaves. You may be listening across Civic Media on a variety of different stations here in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, WTTN, 1580 AM, in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, or you may be listening across the variety of news stations. Say in Oshkosh on Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM. In Richland Center, a radio from the center, WRCE 1450 AM, 107.7 FM. In Amory, Wisconsin on Lake Air, WXCE 1260 AM. And in Wisconsin Rapids on locally grown radio, 97.5 FM, 1320 AM. Man, is that a long list, Aaron. It is growing as well.
That is a lot of numbers there.
It's a lot of numbers, a lot of alphabet soup, but I got through it all. But you could be listening on a variety of those different stations, and you can give me a phone call, 844-967-2789. Share your tangent. You will also be taking calls throughout Dan's appearance, but some of the headlines here in Wisconsin, 4 days out from Election Day, because we've got an interesting set of priorities, it seems like, from the two different political parties here in Wisconsin. We've got some updates on this regard of what Republicans are up to between now and Election Day. And so I'm going to share some of these headlines from the AP because it gives us a little snapshot of what Republicans are doing here in October of the midterm, right before the midterm elections in Wisconsin. One of the swingiest swing states in the entire country, probably the swingiest swing state in the entire country. So what are Republicans doing and what are Democrats doing to try to win votes between over the next 28 days? Some people are already voting. Absentee ballots are being sent in. According to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, roughly 100,000 absentee ballots have already been returned. More than 25% of the total requested absentee ballots for this cycle so far. So we've got people voting. What are the political parties doing to try to attract more votes? Well, we found out that a couple of weeks ago, the Republican Party of Wisconsin, the GOP, state GOP, filed a lawsuit against the city of Milwaukee. And now that lawsuit has been dismissed. So judge dismisses GOP lawsuit over Milwaukee records, reading this over at AP News. An open records request filed against Milwaukee officials by the Republican Party of Wisconsin has been dismissed after the party said it received what it requested. So you may recall, a few weeks ago, the Republican Party got all up in arms because the city of Milwaukee, Mayor Cavalier Johnson, announced that the city would be doing a get out the vote campaign to encourage residents of Milwaukee to participate in the election this November. I believe it was called Milwaukee Votes 2022. Nonpartisan, just encouraging individuals to be civically engaged. Something we highly encourage here at Civic Media. We believe more people should participate in our democracy. It's what the mayor of Milwaukee believed. And it was the whole point of this campaign to get out the vote in Milwaukee ahead of the November elections. And Republicans got upset. They said that it was overwhelmingly partisan, that the city of Milwaukee should not be doing initiatives like Milwaukee Votes 2022. Really indicating that they just don't want residents of Milwaukee to vote. They felt that it was too partisan. It was too in favor of Democrats. They filed an open records request to see how this process underwent. And that open record request, which tend to take several weeks, if not months, because the government workers are, and government employees are doing a lot. And yes, the state law in Wisconsin is that the request be met in a timely manner. But after 2 weeks of not receiving a response, which would be a pretty fast return rate for one of these open records requests if you've ever submitted one to local or state government, it doesn't typically get turned around in 2 weeks. But after 2 weeks of waiting, the GOP said, well, that's against state law. That's not a timely matter for us to receive this. And so they made a bunch of hoopla. They filed a lawsuit against the city for violating the open records law. Something that Michael Gableman, the Republican author or sponsored reviewer, because I will not use the I word today, the reviewer of the 2020 election, waited weeks, if not months, to return open records requests. Republicans didn't say anything then. But after 2 weeks of no response from the city of Milwaukee, they filed a lawsuit a couple weeks back. That lawsuit has now been dismissed because they received the information that they wanted to receive from that open records request. So, gonna be a whole lot of fuss about it when they feel like they can use it for their political advantage. But as soon as that request was met, not a whole lot of outrage from the Republican Party here in Wisconsin. So that's one of the things Republicans are doing between now and Election Day. But one of the other things that we've got in regards to absentee ballot voting here in Wisconsin is a separate outside group. So that's the state party. But a separate outside group, founded by some pretty prominent Republican names at the national level. Former Attorney General Bill Barr, Karl Rove, founding this organization aptly named as the, it's right, and it's, one second here, Restoring Integrity and Trust in Elections. Right. It's one heck of a name. R-I-T-E. And they're suing not to restore integrity or trust in the elections, but they're suing to cause confusion and chaos in elections. Because they filed a lawsuit earlier this year, just within the last few weeks, filed a lawsuit contesting the way that absentee ballot spoiling occurs here in the state of Wisconsin. Practice that the Wisconsin Elections Commission has condoned for years. It is guidance from them that has allowed it to happen. It became a prominent aspect of absentee ballot voting during this past primary cycle when we had a lot of Democratic candidates and one of the Republican candidates for governor, Democratic candidates for U.S. Senate, drop out of the race before primary election day. Their names were still on the ballot. Some people may have cast absentee ballots for those candidates until they dropped out. And absentee ballot spoiling allowed an individual who cast a ballot for one of those candidates to be able to go to their local clerk and request to spoil their ballot, a process that would destroy that first ballot. It had not been cast yet because Wisconsin state law requires all ballots to be cast on election day. So it's an absentee ballot sitting with your local clerk in their office. You destroy that and you can either fill out a secondary absentee ballot or you can fill out a ballot on election day. Process for you to still be able to participate in democracy if circumstances change between you completing your absentee ballot and election day. And then you've got up until about the Thursday, 5 p.m. was the deadline for you to be able to spoil your ballot. So if something happened between that time limit, then you're SOL. Then you can't do it. But absentee balloting, spoiling, has been a thing and became prominent during the partisan primary this fall. And, right, the restoring integrity and trust in our elections decided to sue. There you go, Aaron. Look at that. You're getting quick with the sound drops and everything. They sued the Wisconsin Elections Commission trying to end this process. And the former Republican Attorney General, Brad Schimmel, now a Waukesha County Circuit Court judge, ruled in Wright's favor, saying that that process would stop. Pretty much told all of the election clerks around the state, all 1,800 local election clerks, that you can't absentee ballot spoil. It's not a process that you can do. Well, that decision has been stayed by a court of appeals here in the state of Wisconsin as of today. So we've got to pause on that chaos that was led to since last week when Brad Schimmel, a now county circuit judge, ruled out of Waukesha. So temporarily putting some hold on that chaos, but still, we're going to have to hear more of this legal battle because the two parties, the Wright and the Wisconsin Elections Commission, have until Wednesday, tomorrow at noon, to submit arguments in that case, whether or not the appeals court will take up the appeal. So we're still going to have to find more, but for now, it's a stay decision. But that's what Republicans are doing between now and Election Day. Suing, making a big political hoopla about the city of Milwaukee trying to get its residents to vote, and then having its outside groups also sue the Wisconsin Elections Commission to cause chaos and confusion around absentee ballot voting because they believe that's how they lost in 2020. But really, it's just because Republicans didn't want to reelect Donald Trump here in Wisconsin. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We've got a couple other Wisconsin headlines that we're going to get into with our guest, Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, coming up. If you want to join the conversation, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian on this fine afternoon, because he's out improving some of those new signals that we got and laying the groundwork for us to roll out even more stations here, part of the Civic Media team. If you want to learn more about what we're doing here at Civic Media, go to civicmedia.us to learn more. You can sign up for updates, see all the different stations we are broadcasting across Wisconsin on, and you can check out all the fine local programming that we are putting out here at Civic Media. And speaking of that fine local programming, we've got a guest now that's joining us. He's made his rounds in the last week. I was thankful that I was the first to have Dan on last week. But Dan, you were also on As Goes Wisconsin and the Chad Holmes Show. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area is joining us now here on Dueling Tangents. Dan, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing well, Luke. It's a beautiful day in Milwaukee. Thanks for having me on.
I'm very jealous because we've got a little overcast and some rain here in Madison now, but I'm seeing all these photos that you're putting out of the gorgeous fall that Milwaukee is having, and it looked like a beautiful day out there today.
It really is. It's like it's the picture-perfect fall day. I just took my dog for a walk through Washington Park. It's a wonderful day. Nice. I'm enjoying it. I know it's going to get worse from here, so you know, I'm just enjoying it while I can.
That's kind of how you have to deal with all of Wisconsin weather, regardless of where you are. Milwaukee, Madison, Wausau. You got to appreciate the nice days when we have them because the cold ones are coming. And those are not something to look forward to. So really appreciate that you're able to take some time out of this gorgeous afternoon and join me here on the airwaves.
Yeah, happy to.
I want to kick off first. One of the things that I saw you put out from the recombobulation area in concert with the Heartland Signal, WCPT, down in Waukesha, in Chicago. WAUK is our Waukesha station. But the Heartland Signal and the recombobulation area putting out some commentary on last Friday's debate performance by our senior senator, Ron Johnson. And one of the things that I've seen you note since Friday up through today is kind of Ron Johnson's, I don't know if you want to call it a pity tour or exactly how to refer to it as, but he's going to all of his right-wing favorites and complaining about the moderators, the questions, just pretty much everything he can complain about since last Friday's debate. What are your takeaways and your thoughts about how the senior senator did last Friday?
Yeah, I think he, you know, we saw this in almost some of the immediate aftermath of the debate. We saw a number of Johnson supporters on Twitter complaining about the panels, the panelists from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association who were asking the questions at the debate last Friday. And when you're complaining about the media, you know you lost. So I think it was pretty clear that, you know, the debate had a pretty clear winner in Mandela Barnes and a pretty clear loser in Ron Johnson. And I think, you know, it just goes to show Ron Johnson, as we all know, spends a tremendous amount of time on conservative talk radio, on a number of the shows across the state. And I think, you know, we see it when he is interviewed by some national journalists or whatever it might be. When he steps out of that comfortable, cozy Vicky McKenna talk radio bubble, he doesn't do too well. He has a really hard time answering questions. And so I think, you know, that was one of the things that I tweeted out before the debate, was that he was going to struggle with questions from actual mainstream journalists. And sure enough, that was the case. I think he had kind of this defensive, ornery tone to a lot of his answers. And he, you know, the issues that when you have these opportunities in a debate to really speak directly to voters, I think there's, I still think debates like this are important. I don't know if they really are, but I think they are. And I think he, you know, he stepped on a few landmines there and didn't exactly have a, you know, didn't see his campaign sharing a lot of clips from that debate.
No,
time since.
There hasn't been a whole lot of isolated content that he has shared out. And I have a feeling that's also another indicator, is that he wishes the debate probably went a little bit differently. And it seems that he takes this revisionist history kind of viewpoint from not just this debate, but we've seen him do it with January 6th and other major events in the past, where we all watched it. We watched it happen. He was complaining that there wasn't a question about gas prices. And one of the reporters here in Madison, AJ Biapour, said, "I'm sorry, Senator, I asked you the question on gas prices." Like, he was able to share out the clip of the question that Ron Johnson was trying to say wasn't asked. And it just seems that, yes, he struggles when he's not in his right-wing talk radio bubbles. And do you think that's going to be, do you think that was portrayed to voters on Friday, or do you think he's going to be able to downplay this and revise history the way that he wants it to be seen?
Yeah, look, I think Republicans love blaming the media, so they just go through the normal motions of blaming the media and everything. But I think it's, you know, it just shows he does this kind of stuff all the time. I want to his answer on, they asked a question about Social Security, which obviously has been an issue that has been in the news for him. And one of the reporters who asked the question quoted him directly. And then Ron Johnson replied saying, "You're putting words in my mouth." So that's just the type of approach we've sadly come to expect from our senior senator, Ron Johnson.
Right. And we have 4 weeks from today is Election Day. So that's when the rubber's going to hit the road, and we're going to find out whether or not last Friday's debate performance or this upcoming Thursday's debate performance is going to make a difference on how voters view the candidates and how they ultimately choose between them 4 weeks from today. So we've got a couple of other headlines that we're going to get into. We've got Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area joining us. Going to hopefully get into some comments the Governor Tony Evers has made about shared revenue being a top priority of his if he were to be reelected, as well as his challenger, Tim Michaels, saying that he'll divest from his business, but not necessarily sharing the details of how that would happen. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but Dan Schaefer, the Recombobulation Area, taking your phone calls as well, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian on this fine afternoon. If you missed any portion of this show or any of our past shows, you can go check out the podcast at civicmedia.us, or you can search Dueling Tangents on Apple, on Google, on Spotify, all the fine places where you can find podcasts across the interwebs. We are joined in Brian's absence by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, which you can also find on the interwebs on Substack, the Recombobulation Area. You can be like me, be a paid subscriber to the Recombobulation Area, or you can check out Dan on Twitter and see the excellent takeaways that he's given there as well. Dan, we've got 28 days from now. In 28 days from now, there's going to be a lot that happens, specifically in these next 7 days. We're going to have tomorrow the, I believe, last round of Marquette University Law School polling. There may be one more national poll, but I think this is the last state
poll. I think there's two more Marquette polls. So I think there's the one tomorrow, and then there will be one like right before.
And is that one right before a state poll or the national poll?
I think it's the state poll.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So one, maybe two more Marquette Law School polls here for state polling in Wisconsin. We've got the second and final U.S. senatorial debate between Ron Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. And then on Friday evening, we've got a gubernatorial, the sole gubernatorial debate between Tim Michaels and Tony Evers. And so, a lot going on over these next 3 days. And a lot going to still happen between now and Election Day, 28 days from now. And so, What are you kind of keeping your focus on? Because I know I've got some of the races that I'm keeping an eye on, some of the down ballot ones. But I'm curious to know, in the next 3 days that it will be this whirlwind in front of us, what are you keeping your focus on?
Yeah, I think this is a really important stretch coming up here and could set the tone for really the final couple weeks that will follow. You know, I think it is unfortunate that we're only getting one gubernatorial debate. And the fact that it's the only one debate that will also be on a Friday, so that's going to be tough. And I think, you know, Tony Evers today was meeting in Milwaukee, meeting with the Milwaukee Press Club. Tim Michaels said no to that one. So we're just, you know, that any opportunity that we have to hear the candidates speak directly to voters and get out of the campaign ads and the stump speeches and whatever else, I think that is, you know, that's a really important part of the campaign. So I think these next couple of days, obviously we'll kind of see where things are at tomorrow with the new Marquette poll. And then we'll go into the final couple debates here as well. And I think one other interesting component with the Thursday's debate, the Senate debate, is that during the day on Thursday will be the final hearing of the January 6th committee. And then the debate will be that night. We've seen some recent polling suggesting that with independent voters in particular, Ron Johnson is especially vulnerable on this issue. And no surprise, because he is perhaps the biggest election denier and January 6th insurrection downplayer that there is in the United States Senate. And obviously, he played a role in that and in trying to pass along fake electors. He now has one of those fake electors hired to his campaign staff.
Yeah, so he's employing them.
You know, it's an issue he's definitely vulnerable on. And we saw in last week's debate that he just did not have any semblance of a reasonable answer on any of it. So I think that gives an opportunity to really highlight what is a key issue about Ron Johnson, in his inability to stand for basic principles of American democracy.
Yes. And since the January 6th House Select Committee released details of Senator Johnson and his staff texting back and forth with staff of the vice president on January 6th, 2021, he hasn't had a coherent response since then. He was acting like he was on the phone. He told a reporter, "Oh, I can't talk to you right now. I'm on the phone." And they're like, "No, I can see your phone right now. You're not on there." He's been fumbling since that moment when he first interacted with the press after those details came to light. And last Friday's debate just proved that there isn't really a coherent response that his campaign has been able to come up with. And I contend it's because if you want the true response, it's pretty condemning of the senator's involvement on the plot to overthrow at least the electoral votes for the states of Michigan and Wisconsin on January 6th. And a programming note, if you want to hear those January 6th House Select Committee hearings, you can tune into Civic Media on Thursday beginning at noon across the network. We will be broadcasting those hearings live, and you'll get some commentary from Kristen Bry and potentially myself. We'll be on standby. If the hearing goes to a recess at any point, Kristen and I will be able to provide some of the commentary of what we're watching unfold on Thursday. But that is an excellent point, Dan. Outside of all of the Wisconsin news, the polling release tomorrow, the debates, I almost forgot there for a second that we do have those hearings going on Thursday as well.
Yeah, and I think there was a CBS News poll that was released on Sunday morning, and I'm pulling up the numbers here because they talked about Johnson and January 6th and the wanting the election overturned. So the question that the CBS News poll had was, what role does Johnson's views play, views on 2020 and the validity of election play? This says, among independents who say that Johnson wanted the election overturned, 8 in 10 support Barnes. So that's a pretty overwhelming number of independents going one way who are aware of this issue. And I think the more attention that you bring to this with some of these swing voters who are concerned about the future of American democracy and the senator's role in January 6th, I think that's, you know, it's really going to offer an opportunity to really go in on that. And I think they should take it.
Yeah, and who knows? Depending on how the questions are asked, the senator will probably just blame the questions on Thursday if he's asked about it during the debate. So it'll be very interesting to see how those hearings unfold and how the debate performance between incumbent Senator Ron Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes in that bid for U.S. Senate will unfold in that final debate on Thursday evening. But one of the other races, top of the ticket races, is the gubernatorial race here in Wisconsin. Tim Michaels, when he first got into the race, the number one aspect of the ad buy that he purchased to spread the word that he was getting into the Republican primary for governor was that he was a businessman. That his name, you've seen it before, Michaels Corporation, with the construction projects that they do around the state. And he said that he flipped Madison upside down, and he was running on his business record. That was really the soul of how he got into the race. And we've seen this before. In 2016, then Donald Trump, Republican candidate for president, was running on a brand of, he was a popular businessman. He was seen as the apprentice, you're fired guy on NBC. That was his brand, and he was running on it. He was a successful billionaire, is what he alleged. We've never seen his taxes. We've gotten bits and pieces of them since then. But he promised to divest from he put his company in a blind trust, is what Trump said throughout the campaign trail in 2016. And that's the exact same playbook that we are now seeing from Tim Michaels. And I don't know how he hasn't faced more questions on this. I've got to assume that there's going to be some questions in the one and only debate that Michaels and Evers will have this Friday evening. But Dan, what are your thoughts on why this isn't being discussed more about one of the businessmen that runs one of the biggest state contract receivers in Wisconsin is now running to be governor of that said state?
Yeah, I think it's a huge story. I think, when you're looking at, you know, just the simple job of the governor and things like that, these state contracts are a huge part of it. And, you know, go by any construction site in the state of Wisconsin, all the potholes that Tony Evers is campaigning on that he's filling, you're going to see like a lot of Michael's trucks around here. You know, I was even down at City Hall in Milwaukee. They have some construction going on there. They have some Michael's vehicles around there. So I think, you know, and Michael's had said in an interview with a talk radio host early in the campaign that he still wants the company to be competing for those contracts. And I think since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming in southeastern Wisconsin, too, with the preparation for Foxconn, which is a deal that under former Governor Scott Walker never really came to fruition, but they did a lot of the infrastructure legwork to prepare for it without any finite results coming for investment in that area.
Right. They did some big highway construction projects between Milwaukee and Chicago, kind of anticipating something going on there, which of course never came to fruition. And there's in Milwaukee right now, they're talking about there's a proposal for either a modernization or expansion of I-94, the east-west part of I-94 in the city of Milwaukee. That's going to be a $1 billion project that's going to be happening during the next gubernatorial term. Like, do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract for this? I think there are some real questions that the Michaels campaign is just really not answering. So there was a story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published yesterday morning on this. And, you know, I'll just read straight from the article here. It says, with less than a month to go before the midterm elections, the Michaels campaign and company have not answered questions from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about how Michaels will handle state road contracts. I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
That's right. So I think this kind of self-dealing, is something that I think is a real problem in politics in general. And I think if you have a governor who's going to be in this type of position where, you know, if he were to win, he's going to have huge majorities in the state legislature. He's going to be able to kind of push forward whatever agenda he's going to want. And, you know, is that agenda going to be giving his family's company a whole bunch of contracts for state projects? I think that's a question that needs to be answered. But I think, you know, part of the strategy that the Michaels campaign has had is they're avoiding traditional media. They're keeping him away from people who might ask him difficult questions. They're only doing the one debate. They're not doing these type of traditional press club events and stuff like that Evers is doing. So I think they're just trying to keep this out of the spotlight and hoping it never becomes a big enough issue that it goes away. But I think, you know, you have to, whether it's no matter the candidate of, you know, whether it's, I mean, think about Governor Pritzker in Illinois. Like, he has a business that you have to answer questions about that. You know, if somebody's coming from the private sector to the public sector and does business with the state, you have to be critical of those types of decisions. You absolutely do. So I think this is a huge story. I think people should keep, you know, I hope more journalists will be writing about this in the weeks to come, because I think it is a really big issue and it's not getting enough attention.
Yeah, there's absolutely a lot to cover between now and the next 28 days. But a little plug for some excellent journalism on that exact project that you're referencing that will take place during the next gubernatorial term, the Expanding the Divide, a series done by the Recombobulation Area. We've got a couple of only 90 seconds or so here before our next commercial break. So I think this is an excellent time. How can listeners learn more about the work that you're putting out, like Expanding the Divide, like the columns that you have in the Heartland Signal? Where can they go to learn more, Dan?
Yeah, you can find me at the Recombobulation Area. I publish on Substack. It's a weekly opinion column. I've been doing a little bit more than once a week lately, so you can find a little bit more of the content there. And you can also, of course, find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, where I will occasionally tweet about things other than the Milwaukee Bucks.
Which, speaking of the Bucks, we've got nine days. There we go. Any previews for how that game in Philadelphia is going to go? You like that matchup for Giannis?
Always like the Giannis matchup against the Sixers. Always like that matchup.
It's a good one. It's one of my favorites too. I'm excited that they get to kick off the season against the 76ers. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We got one more segment left in the day. Time for your phone calls if you'd like to share your tangent. 844-967-2789. But we might get into the nitty-gritty of shared revenue when we get back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon. He is off improving the Civic Media Network, laying the groundwork for some more stations. If you want to find out, be the first in the know of where the next Civic Media station is going to be popping up, you're going to want to go over to civicmedia.us, check out the brand new homepage, sign up to learn more, and you can learn all about the fine programming that we're doing across the network of Civic Media radio stations there as well. We are joined in Brian's absence by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. And Dan, it's a new era of Milwaukee politics. The Republican Party wants to have this nice grace period where they're bringing their national convention in 2024 to Milwaukee. They want to showcase Milwaukee on the national stage. It is a renewed era of relations between Republicans and the city of Milwaukee. And then a few weeks ago, they decided to sue the city of Milwaukee. And we found out today that that lawsuit got dropped because the open records request was fulfilled. So that is the kind of the new era that we have about Republicans in the city of Milwaukee, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Kind of, I've read a lot of them about the RNC coming to town in 2024, but your thoughts on this lawsuit and it being dropped as of today.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's been a lot of talk in Milwaukee lately about wanting a quote unquote reset with state government. Now, whether you think it should be Milwaukee's responsibility to have that reset or the Republicans in Madison's responsibility to have that reset after having cut the city and county's budget by hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars over the past decades, we'll leave that up to you. But but I think part of, you know, part of new leadership that we have in the city of Milwaukee have really recognized that the relationship with the state needs to change. And I think our new mayor, Cavalier Johnson, our county executive, David Crowley, have really been pushing lately to change the dynamic with the Republicans, folks like Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu in Madison, who are have kind of been, be quite frank, held the city back in a lot of ways in recent years. And so I think there's a real recognition that the shared revenue, the lack of local control that the city has, it's a dynamic that needs to be changed. Had some encouraging signs from Johnson, from Crowley, having meetings with some of these Republicans. But yeah, we still have these awful situations like when Republicans are suing the city for trying to encourage voter turnout.
Yeah, there's been some promising signs, but that was not one of them. One of my other something that really stuck out to me in the discourse between state level Republicans like Fond du Lac District Attorney Eric Toney, when he was saying if he was to be elected Attorney General, he'd want to have state control over prosecuting crimes in Milwaukee County. And essentially, even taking it steps further of removing local control for Milwaukee County, and Mayor Cavalier Johnson saying Milwaukee is not your punching bag. And seeing that kind of response when proposals like that are floated is a breath of fresh air. I am glad that Mayor Johnson is stepping up and saying that and pointing out the fact that Milwaukee will not be your punching bag on the state stage when it comes to that relationship. But one of the indicators that we are now seeing is at that press event with the Milwaukee Press Club earlier today, Governor Tony Evers said if he were to be reelected, his top priority would be fixing the shared revenue formulas that we have here and increasing the local revenue share for... There you go, Aaron. Yes, not the punching bag, but increasing the local revenue funding models for cities outside of Madison, outside of the capital's control. And so do you think that that's something that the Evers administration will see some luck with if reelected to a second term? Or where are your thoughts on where that shared revenue debate will be after 28 days from now, when we find out who is going to be controlling the levers of power for the next 4 years here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think it's become really clear over this past, you know, in recent weeks and months and whatever, with cities and municipalities bringing their budgets forward, that the state shared revenue formula is broken. You know, you see municipalities, local governments across the state are having to turn to referendum to fund key projects in their communities. And this is really coming to focus in Milwaukee lately. Milwaukee put its budget forth a few weeks ago, Cavalier Johnson introducing his first budget that's seeing pretty much across the board cuts. And if not for the federal ARPA dollars that passed by Democrats in Congress, the city would be facing just deep, deep cuts. And, you know, I talked to the budget director at the city, and he was saying basically that, you know, you index for inflation, the amount the city is losing out on is $150 million. That's not over the course of several budgets. That's in 1 year. So I think the city of Milwaukee, is like a very pronounced version of this because it's a much larger city than any other in the state. And so you're seeing those big price tags and whatnot. But this is something that every city in the state is dealing with, these problems with shared revenue. And right now the state legislature, the Republican-controlled state legislature, is sitting on a $5 billion surplus.
More than $5 billion.
So we have these situations, yeah. Like Milwaukee, like for example, the Parks Department in Milwaukee County has the same budget that it did in 1989. And the state government is sitting on a $5 billion surplus.
That was before I was born.
It just doesn't work.
That is a budget from before I was born. And so, yeah, that is not a sustainable model to be able to have local control. And it's got to be, we've got to talk about this more as well. Like we've discussed the Tim Michaels putting how he's going to handle his company's business needs to be talked more because it's being ignored. But this is also a problem that has been ignored. And it's not just affecting Milwaukee. It's not just affecting Madison. It's affecting Waukesha County. They're the sheriff's office in Waukesha County is facing funding gaps as well. And so it's shared revenue across the board. And we have to talk about it more because it's got to be upsetting for both Republican voters and Democratic voters alike when you hear that these budget shortfalls and services may potentially be cut, all while that $5 billion surplus is being sat on and potentially just saved for tax cuts. Next cycle when it comes to how Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu are going to try to dole it out. Dan, really appreciate you joining me this afternoon. Every Tuesday between now and the election, we're going to have Dan join us on Tuesday afternoons. Hopefully Brian will be able to join us next Tuesday as well, and it'll be the three of us having a discussion rather than just the two of us. But then we got to even account for more tangents and everything, but really appreciate you joining me this afternoon, Dan. If you miss any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. We've got the Matt McNeil Show coming up next across Civic Media. And then following that, the Devil's Advocates. We'll be back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Jen.